It seems like it's an age-old debate at this point. Nature versus nurture. Is it our genes or our environment that's responsible for shaping the people that we become? But now there's kind of a third theory out there. It's an emerging field of science just within the past 5 or 10 years about fetal origins. And it suggests that the time spent in the womb, those 9 months before birth, actually help shape the people that we are, even in terms of the diseases we may contract. Here to talk about it is Annie Murphy-Paul. Her new book is called Origins, How the 9 months Before Birth Shaped the Rest of Our Lives. Good morning.
Good morning, Celeste.
First of all, let's talk about this, the issue of nature versus nurture, because you call it the century's intellectual main event, but then you sidestep the debate already in terms of your findings. How so?
Well, the fetal origins is really kind of, as you say, a third way between nature and nurture. It involves both nature and nurture in that the 9 months we spend in the womb is a prime location for what's known as epigenetic modification. That's the process in which the way that genes are expressed is influenced by the environment. So it's not as if we get our DNA at conception and that's the blueprint that unfolds without change. It actually is tweaked and tuned, and that happens especially consequentially during the 9 months of gestation. So, and then we can also think of the womb as our first environment. It really, you know, our nurture does not begin at the moment of birth. It begins before that. So the 9 months of gestation, it turns out, are this crucial kind of staging ground where both nature and nurture are engaged in this intimate interplay.
So to a certain, I mean, these are certainly not new ideas. In fact, in your book, you talk a lot about how this is sort of an age-old theory going back even to the Greeks, that the things that a woman eats, the things that a woman does, even her stress, affects the development of the child inside. So what's different about what you're discovering from the collection of data and studies that you've done?
Well, for one thing, that was folk wisdom. That was kind of old wives' tales and a general sense that this was the case, that events and experiences before birth could influence our later lives. Now we have some science to back that up. And while it is an old idea that we're shaped before birth in the womb, that was something that we forgot, that the scientific and medical culture of the mid-20th century really rejected outright. The thought was that the fetus was sealed away in the placenta, that nothing the woman did could really affect the fetus. I mean, that's how we had the tragedies of thalidomide and DES, because pregnant women were given medications with the idea that the fetus would not be affected. So I think we're rediscovering this old idea, and we're collecting and gathering the evidence to support it.
And that's also how it led to women at the time smoking and drinking as
exactly.
Well, and not thinking. But there's a couple other things that you talk about. The first is the idea that that even doctors had, that the fetus was the perfect parasite. Mm-hmm. Explain that to me, and how you've discovered that food, the way that the fetuses get and intake food is very different.
Right. Yes, the perfect parasite idea was the notion that the fetus took whatever it needed from the woman's diet or even from her body, and that it was not affected by whatever in particular the woman ate. And I think there's something telling even in that language. To call a fetus a parasite is not really respectful.
Not very attractive. Yeah.
No.
Not very cuddly, is it?
Not very cuddly. But what we're learning is that the fetus is exquisitely sensitive to what the woman eats, that it's actually using the woman's diet and nutrition level as a kind of cue to what nutritional environment they're going to encounter on the other side of the womb once they're born. So they're adjusting their appetite and metabolism and their physiology accordingly. So it really matters what women eat during pregnancy, because it's telling the fetus a story about the world that on the outside.
Okay, but here's the thing. I mean, having read, I didn't finish the entire book, but having read quite a bit of some of the studies that you looked at in terms of what happens during those 9 months in the womb affects whether the chances that the child will eventually get diabetes, whether they'll eventually get heart disease, how smart they are, all their mental capacity, whether they're prone to schizophrenia. And yet you also have in here a pretty eloquent chapter telling women not to be so afraid of love what they do and that they shouldn't feel the pressure to be perfect in what they're doing during those 9 months. How are those two things compatible?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, look, I was pregnant while I researched and wrote the book, so I feel every bit of the pressure and I'm aware of every bit of the pressure and responsibility that women feel while they're pregnant. My point is that this is an emerging field of research. It's an important field of research. We're going to be hearing more about it. So we need to find a more productive and positive way to think about these findings instead of the sort of scary bulletins that women get from newspaper headlines, from their friends, from their mothers, don't do this, don't do that. I wanted to put this research into a historical context, into a cultural context, give the reader some new ways to think about it. And I actually did emerge, you know, after my 9 months of research and reporting in this area while pregnant, with a much more positive and engaged kind of relationship with the research. I found it exciting. I found it adventurous and something to be optimistic about in terms of interventions that can improve public health. So I think we need to think, we need to have a better way of thinking about pregnancy, and I'm trying to start the conversation towards that end.
Well, since you mentioned adventurous, let's talk finally about the pregnant superwoman, which is the character that you think kind of developed during, you know, the 80s. Explain to me what the pregnant superwoman is.
Yes, yes. Well, I talk in the book about how in Victorian times, women, pregnant women were expected to rest, to refrain from activity, even to remain confined to their homes. And of course, our attitudes now are very different. Pregnant women are praised and lauded if they don't slow down even a little bit during pregnancy, if they keep up everything they do in their normal lives. And so my question that I raise in the book is, have we come up with a set of expectations that are in their own way just as oppressive as those older Victorian era conventions, wherein women don't feel like they can say, I'm tired, I want to put my feet up, I want to stop working, you know, before I go into labor? Because I think right now women are expected to live up to this superwoman image.
Okay, well, it's a book full of contradictions, but they're all interesting. It's called Origins, How the 9 months Before Birth Shaped the Rest of Our Lives. And the author is journalist Annie Murphy Paul. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we've got this project going on over at thetakeaway.org, photographs and class, your photographs of Americans, of American class, middle class, upper class, and lower. Help us formulate this. We want some more help. Think about what class you're a part of. Take a picture of something in your life that represents it. Upload it to thetakeaway.org. We got pictures of SUVs. We got laptops. We have Dunkin' Donuts mugs. John Hockenberry's infant son is on there, a minivan. It runs the gamut. So upload your photos. Let us know where you stand in the American class hierarchy. I'm Todd Zwilligan for John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headley. This is The Takeaway.